let's kind of remind ourselves where we were. Remember, the bowl judgments are the plagues, plagues, and that meant a blow or a wound. And last week we saw the five. Bowl one was sores. The second bowl, the sea became blood. The third bowl was rivers, and the fresh water became blood. Fourth bowl was the scorching heat of the sun. And then that fifth bowl was darkness. So we got to remember the state of man when all of this is taking place. There are seven bowls. So we're in really bad shape. The people that are in this tribulation period are in really, really bad shape at this point. And now we're getting ready to go to the sixth bowl. So let's read. Let's go ahead and go to the next one and read verses 12 through 16 in Revelation 16. It says, "Then the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up, so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are spirits of demons performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. Behold, I am coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. And they gathered them together to the place in Hebrew called Armageddon." So this is the sixth bowl. What happens at the sixth bowl, the Euphrates dries up. Let's look at the map. Next slide. This is the Euphrates. 17, of course, that's not working either. 1,700 mile river right through here. I mean, the Euphrates has been the center of God's creation really from the Garden of Eden. It used to form the border of the land given to Abraham. Very, very important river. So what's going to happen, and it used to serve as the eastern border of the Roman Empire. So what's going to happen is this river, when the sixth bowl is poured out, it's going to dry up. All right? Now, it's going to dry up. Why is it going to dry up? He tells us. Yeah. Exactly. Go back to the map again. Let's look at this. It's going to dry up to allow the armies from the east. Look where this is. Iran. Now, can you imagine the shock of that Iran would want to invade Israel? Who would have thunk that, right? I mean, that's what's going on. And we're going to read as we get into the battle that Iran partners with China, partners with Russia. All of these countries are going to come across. But just think about right now how much of a barrier the Euphrates creates. You can't get an army clearly across a raging river. When it dries up, think about it. What do you got to do? You don't need a bridge anymore. You don't need military transports. All you got to do is simply walk along and walk across. So that's what's going to happen when the Euphrates dries up. It's pretty scary, pretty neat. When that does happen. So we look at it, and the water was dried up so that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And when that way is prepared, they're going to come across. And we see, good evening, and we see what is the motivating force of these kings. What is it that gets them together in verse 14? We see these spirits that are drawn to Armageddon. These are the spirits of the demons performing signs which go out to the kings of the earth. Three unclean spirits. And you know, I've told you that the Antichrist is a mocker. And what he does is he tries to imitate what God does. So he's got his little trinity, right? Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet, just like God has for the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. But these demons come out and they go to the kings of the earth. Now we see all throughout the Bible, all throughout the Old Testament, that the angels and demons, they fight with the kings. In fact, you know, the prince of Persia, referenced in Daniel, is actually a demon. Right? You guys may remember when Daniel was praying, and he had prayed, and the answer didn't come for 21 days. Gabriel shows up, and he says, hey, I was supposed to come tell you this, but I got delayed. I had to get Michael to help me. Michael the archangel came, fought with the prince of Persia, and he's the one that let me come. So we know that these princes have all kinds of battles with humans. So we see it was dried up to let the kings of the army pass. In your handout in verse 13, do you see the imitation of the devil? You've got you've got Satan, the beast, and the Antichrist. And then in verse 14, we covered that already. What was the job of the unclean spirits? So their job was to gather together the world to battle. So as we start looking in the coming weeks at Armageddon, all of this is going to take place in about 8 stages. There's little battles, and then they all start coming together when the armies of the east come across. And all of this is satanic influence. All of it is demonic inspired. And what's going on? Who's he trying to kill at this point? There's only one group left. And here's the thing. You've got the Jews. Remember, that where are the Jews? Yep, they're still in hiding. Where are the tribulation saints? Well, they're in heaven. So the Jews are there, they're in hiding, but they're in Israel somewhere the north of Israel. And then you've got the people who are saved, who have not yet been martyred, who are still around too. So that's the people that he's coming to try and kill. The world is going to ultimately try to do this. Now it starts out that they're coming against the Antichrist. They're coming against Israel, because where's his throne? Yeah, so we'll see all these stages, but ultimately it's a great war on Jerusalem. All right, then look at verse 15. He says, "Behold, I am coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame." So Jesus uses this analogy a lot. He says, "Behold, I'm coming as a thief." When does a thief come?
When we're not expecting.
Yeah, when we're not expecting it. If you were... last night, the Mandy and Sheila brought the kids by to trick-or-treat, but she called first because she knows we have that big dog. So she called. She said, "Can I bring them into trick-or-treat?" Thieves don't do that. I was thinking about this verse last night when she called, and I'm like, yeah, that'd be kind of nice if we could get the dog under control and all that kind of stuff. That's not how a thief does. Thief comes in when you don't expect it, usually at night, but there's a blessing on those people who watch and who keep their garments ready and are basically prepared. So that blessing is still going to go to the Jewish people, to the people who are saved but are still on the planet. And we'll see, well, we'll get there. "And they gathered them together in the place in the Hebrew called Armageddon." And that's where they were to gather the kings. It's Mount Megiddo. Armageddon is the Hebrew name for Mount Megiddo. M-E-G-I-D-D-O. M-E-G-I-D-D-O. Let's look at the next slide. This is Mount Megiddo. And you can see the valley in between. This is called the Valley of Decision. It's got lots of different names in the Bible. But if you will remember a couple of things. Remember we read that the blood would come up to the horses' bridles in the valley? This is the valley. Now this valley basically goes 200 miles north and south through Israel. Okay? But you're looking at the mountains. So this mountain that we're standing on in this picture is Mount Megiddo. and it is the place, it's going to be the place of Armageddon. So that we know where the final battle is going to take place. The Bible tells us exactly where it is. And we know that the battle's going to rage over these plains, because that's where all the death is going to occur. And if you look back in history, this was where Barak had his victory over the Canaanites in Judges. Gideon beat the Midianites here. This is called the Valley of Jehoshaphat. It's called the Valley of Decision. Lots of stuff takes place historically in this area. Napoleon, when he came through, called this the greatest battlefield he had ever seen. I mean, look at it. Because if you've got the high ground, what are you going to do? You're going to bomb and whatever you can do to the people in the valley. So whoever holds that high ground, just like traditional military tactics, is going to be in control. They're going to be slaughtering all those people that are in there. But you got 200 miles of that valley that's essentially about 40 miles wide. So think about that. And that's how deep that's going to be when that blood starts coming up to the bridles. Does that make sense? So Armageddon, we think of Armageddon, we think of it as being a horrible battle, and it is going to be horrible, but it's all God-inspired. Okay, this is God's way to deal with the transgressors, to deal with the Antichrist, to deal with all of these people who are following him.
And he's bent over backwards to keep this, keep us from being
there. Yeah. Yeah, to keep us, we got to remember where we're at. Because a lot of people, when they get to this stage, I've told you there's no interlude now between the sixth bowl and the seventh bowl that we're getting ready to look at. Usually there is, and that's a period of God's grace. We're not going to get that. So go to the back page if you're following on the outline. We don't get the interlude this time, because this time there is no grace that God's going to extend. We saw in chapter 15 that entry to his temple, entry to his throne is closed while these seven bowls are being poured out. So no one, while these seven bowls are going to be poured out, is going to be saved. But now think about this. Think about who's left. You've either been killed, so you're a tribulation saint, in which case you're not on the earth. You're in hiding under God's protection and Michael's protection, which they can't get you. So the only people that are really still left to be part of this great part of this judgment are those people who have flatly rejected God, like we talked about last week. No ignorance. Ignorance is no longer an excuse. These people have flatly rejected God. So in that sense, I think that we can understand that it's a little more justified. A lot of people have trouble with this. Why would God do this? Why did God kill people in the Old Testament? Okay? I mean, a lot of people have trouble with that question. And we need to understand that He gave us every single chance. He gave every person here, 144,000 witnesses, two witnesses, these three angels flying around. And if you don't believe it after all of that, you're just not going to believe it. You've got to intentionally turn it out, which we saw last week. That's what people do. So this is what's going to happen. And let's look at, let's just kind of read verses, the rest of the chapter, verse 17 through 23. It says, "Then the seventh angel poured out his bowl into the air, and a loud voice came out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, 'It is done.' And there were noises and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such a mighty and great earthquake as has not occurred since men were on the earth. Now the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. Then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And great hail from heaven fell upon men, each hailstone about the weight of a talent." And here's what happened. Again, Remember who's talking, and this will make perfect sense to you. Men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, since that plague was exceedingly great. So we remember who's getting this judgment, and their response makes sense. But let's look at the earthquake first, I guess. The earthquake will be the worst the world has ever seen. So when we hear, you know, you think about the San Francisco earthquake, the Oakland earthquake, you think about all these other little earthquakes that happen, they're nothing. The New Madrid Fault that reversed the Mississippi River that created Real Foot Lake, nothing. This earthquake is going to be so bad that the cities of the nation will fall. And that is literally what it says. They will collapse. So the earthquake is going to be really, really, really bad. And in verse 17, when God says it's done, really the best translation of that is it has been done and it will stay done. So this is it. This is the end of what we're doing. And he says, you know, it's done, and then the earthquakes happen. So think about that. The worst earthquake the world has ever known, and all of the cities will fall. All right? Jerusalem, that great city, is going to split into three parts. Go back a little bit. It's going to split into three parts. So you guys have seen pictures of Jerusalem. That's how bad it's going to be. There's going to be three little segments of Jerusalem because it's all going to break apart. But now if you look in verse 19, we see that Babylon is going to be a little bit different. So let's go to the next one. Babylon is going to be different. That's where the beast is going to be headquartered. So it's going to be the political and economic capital of the world. We're going to see next week in chapter 17 that Babylon, the religious harlot, the false religious system, is going to fall. And then in 18, we're going to see that the entire economic system falls. So chapters 17 and 18 are really expounding on what we're simply reading in verse 19 of chapter 16. They're going to describe how the fall happens, what the fall happens. They're going to describe what these economic systems are. They're going to describe what the false religious systems are. So that's what we will be doing next week. We'll be looking at the final false religion in the world, which interestingly is not that much different than the first false religion in the world. And it actually is at the same place that one of the first false religions in the world came to be. So if you're looking at your outline, how does the Bible describe this last earthquake in 18 as the worst the world has ever seen? And then we get to the islands fleeing away. So think about what it's saying there. This earthquake is going to be so powerful that islands in the sea are going to move away. Now, we've seen actually that happen in our own lives. Little islands, atolls, they'll pop up, they'll go away. But these big islands that we're talking about are going to run away. They're going to disperse. Mountains were going to disappear. So this is a very literal, really bad earthquake. It's going to change the earth's topography. It's going to change everything so that when the millennial kingdom comes in and Christ sets up his kingdom in Jerusalem, that's going to be the focal point of the world. But everything else is going to fall. Okay? Then in verse 21, we get these hailstones. And this talent, when it refers to weight, is 75 pounds. So in verse 19, each piece of hail weighs about 75 pounds. So just imagine, I mean, anybody had hail damage to your car? Okay. And the hail that damaged your car probably was about yay size, probably was 5 ounces, probably, maybe that, half a pound tops. Can you imagine a 75-pound hailstone hitting your car? There will be nothing left of that. Now remember, this comes as the earthquake is dropping everything. These 75-pound hailstones just come and hit people, things, whatever's left, these hailstones are going to drop. So it's going to completely destroy everything that exists. And you think about where we are now. If you go back and you look at that summary of the judgment sheet that I gave you, I mean, you know, the world's people have already been destroyed. We're down to half the world's population already, getting ready to be a lot lower than that. It's getting ready to be much lower. You know, the animals are dead. A third of the all the fish are now dead. The waters are blood. There's no fresh water to drink. There's no seawater that can be dealt with. There's no animal life in the sea. And everything is destroyed. Mountains are collapsing. Cities are destroyed. So the response, obviously, as we talked about, men blaspheme God. Because remember, they have chosen who they want to serve. And they're now serving the devil, and he is naturally their enemy, right? We started in the high school class today a study of the Screwtape letters. You guys ever read those? Those are really, really cool. They are, C.S. Lewis wrote those, and he writes it from the perspective of an older demon called Screwtape, who's writing to his nephew, who's trying to keep this guy from becoming a Christian. So he's giving him the strategies that he should use to keep him from becoming a Christian. And then when he does become a Christian, oh, well, ways to get him to mess up. And it's really a good series of letters. I mean, it's fiction, but it uses Bible verses to talk about the schemes of the devil. And it gets to the point where, you know, the demons, they all talk about God. And God in those letters is the enemy. Our father down below is Satan. So they have taken, these people in this last period of time, have taken that ultimate position, and they are saying, God is the enemy. And that's why they're blaspheming him. So that should make perfect sense. You know, to us, why we can't put our mindset, being Christians and knowing what we know, it's so hard to think that anybody could ever do that. But those are the kind of people that have given their allegiance to somebody. And once they do that, once they understand or believe that the devil, the beast, and the false prophet are their source of food, their source of income, all this stuff, they will do anything they can to keep that system. We've seen that through history, right? So that's what's going on with blaspheming, all right? So, where to now? Christ comes at the end of this. We're going to take chapter 17 and 18. They're going to give us more detail regarding the judgment of Babylon, and that's what we will start with next week. As I told you, 17 is going to be the judgment of the false religions. 18 is going to be the judgment of the economies. And then we're going to come back to a chronological sequence. So 17 and 18 are really part of verse 19. Does that make sense? So that we're just expounding on the judgment that's entered on Babylon, and we'll talk about that, and then we finish chronologically. We're going to see chapter 19, Christ at his second coming, but it's not two chapters later. It's literally that seventh judgment hits, and boom, here's Christ. Because remember, we've already seen him standing on the Mount of Olives. You remember that from last week? He's standing on the Mount of Olives with the ones that have the mark on their heads with his saved people. Then chapters 20 and 22 are going to tell us about the millennial kingdom, and they're going to tell us about the new heaven and the new earth. Between chapter 17 and 18, we're going to look at the battle of Armageddon a lot so that you guys understand what's going to happen. And we'll see all of it. We'll see, like I said, there's actually references to Moscow, what's now Moscow in there, and it's pretty interesting. All right, next. Yeah, we talked about Revelation 17. All these false religions will be united in one great world religion. And we know that that religion is going to exist past the Antichrist. Because here's what happens. The Antichrist, when he sets himself up as the object of worship, for 3.5 years he's used this false religious system to get power, to enhance his own power. But eventually he's like, I don't need you anymore, right? So when he says, I don't need you anymore, he's going to try and rid himself of the false religious system, which is kind of interesting. You know, there's no honor among thieves, is what they say. He's going to turn on that. So it's going to talk about the spiritual nature of his kingdom. And then 18, we're going to get into the stock market. We're going to talk about all kinds of material aspects. So as we finish, I knew this one was going to be short. We just could not get them both in one time. As we finish up, got to remember a couple of things. The pouring out of the seventh bowl is followed immediately by Christ. And 17 and 18 are going to tell us exactly what is being judged. So we're going to see all of the reason God judges the false religions. Now, before we do that, I want to give you some thoughts for next week. What is it that comprises all false religions? What do you think is the primary component of all false religions?
Works is part of it.
Yep. Definitely works. That's an aspect of it. That's something that shows up in it. Take a step back from works. Why do we think works are so important?
It gives us a greater importance.
Ah, there you go. There you go. We want control, right? We want input. We want a say. And when they built the Tower of Babel, you know, why'd they build the tower? Yeah, to reach the heavens, that little box room on top, they were going to have God come down and talk to them. Okay, wrong attitude. In every religion, and that's symbolic, you know, they built that pyramid, that ziggurat, to get to heaven. Every single religion, again, like I talked about this morning in quotes, every single religion works its way to heaven. In Christianity, heaven came down. Very, very different. And heaven came down to us when we didn't want it, weren't ready for it, and God loved us so much when we were His enemy that He died for us. So that's the huge difference. But every false religion promotes self, ultimately. You know, they can do it in different ways. Some of them just point blank do it. But every one is going to be about what you can do, what you can earn, what you can be, all those kind of things. And that is anti-God, point blank. Pride is anti-God. He doesn't like it. It's an abomination to Him. And when you say anything like we talked about this morning, ooh, look what I did, you know, that's not the right way to be.
Lesson today talked about God having the glory.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can give us the glory, God will be robbed of that glory.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's kind of like we talked about this morning. Just think, I mean, there's times in the past where I've been boastful, but think about how we are when we're boastful. We take that glory. You know, we can be appreciative of what God says. We can be appreciative of God giving us gifts without being boastful. You just thank God, you know. But that is the thing I want you to think about next week as we move in to what's called the Great Harlot. The Great Harlot is the last world religion, and it will be the religion that is in place when the church leaves. Remember, when the church goes, people are going to want to know why, right? And what are they going to turn to? Yeah, whoever God is. They're going to turn to that. They're going to look for any explanation, and there's going to be dozens of explanations. You know, aliens probably will be the big one. But there's going to be dozens of explanations out there for what happened to these people and then for how we're supposed to survive. And what, you know, originally, these people ultimately learned that God is the one judging. Right? We learned that in chapter 6. But up until that happens, all this starts. We get through six seals without them knowing this. And then all of a sudden, people start to realize, ooh, this is God. We just need to die. Which they can't at that point. So that's the mindset, and that's the mindset of that world religion that's going to exist and will continue to exist up until it's destroyed. And, you know, God uses Satan to destroy the fake religion too, which is kind of neat, because he's the one that set it up. But he gets no use of it anymore, and it's time to be destroyed. Okay? Is that it, Isaiah? Are we done? I think that's it for the slides. Yep. So, questions on this one? Just two bowls, but a massive, massive damage.
Four or five slides back, you had like the earthquake, you had like four or five bullets.
Mm-hmm. All right, Isaiah, can you go back to the earthquake slide?
That's my OCD.
I think that's it.
One more?
Yeah, this is what's going to happen. The earthquake, Jerusalem gets divided, cities fall, Babylon falls, and then the giant hail. Well, it's to gather the kings, because they're going to go out. You know, they're going to be whispering things in their ears like, ooh, he's weak, let's go attack. Or, ooh, the Euphrates dried up. Did you hear that on the news? You know, CNN reports the Euphrates is dry. You know, you don't have to deal with the logistics. You couldn't get your army of 200 million soldiers across then. Now you can, just walk them. It all makes sense when you start thinking geographically, and then you see that valley and you're just like, boy, that's... You know, Napoleon was right. I'd want the high ground there. But what a battle it would be if you're on the plain, flat, big.
Is that in the northern part of Israel?
Yeah, 60 miles north of Jerusalem. Now, interestingly, we know that cave system's up there somewhere too, so... Don't know where that's going to be. No, he doesn't tell anybody where that is. But
have you seen that valley? Have you been there?
I have not been there. Seen pictures and videos. We went to, if you ever get to D.C., I think it's still open. They have the American Bible Museum there. And what they do is they give you these virtual reality glasses, I guess, and you can literally walk through Israel. And you walk through different parts, and this is one of them. But you can go into the temples, you can go into those kind of things. And it's all 3D. It's all VR, I think is the term. But it was pretty neat. No, I've not been there. I would like to go. You guys kind of get where we are? All right. Anybody got any questions? All right. Well, thank you guys for coming tonight.